It was the moment we had feared coming for some weeks, but a 0-0 draw away at Luton, followed by a 2-2 draw at home to Swansea, meant there would be no playoff party, no Premier League dreaming, and no purple turtle mayhem for this year's Reading FC side. Welcome to a slightly despondent, I guess, episode 262 of the Tarnhurst End podcast with your host, Mark Mayer. The podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans, and joining me this week, the view from the Dolan, is Ben Thomas. How are you feeling, mate?
Yeah, I feel a bit better than I thought I would, actually. I think it's been coming for a few weeks. So it's, the realisation that the season's over with two games to go. I felt worse later on in early on in the season anyway. So yeah, not too bad today, Mark.
I guess at the very least, this doesn't come as a surprise. Anyone who's watched Reading for the last 10 or 12 weeks will have known that, you know, as I said, this is the moment we feared coming. It's not as if it's laid on us at the last minute with a kind of Leo Ojoa-esque last kick of the ball while Reading fans are streaming onto the pitch thinking that they've got sixth place when in reality they're seventh. That would be a totally different scenario and utterly embarrassing were that to have ever happened to our club. So at the very least, we're not feeling that. So let's go on to the recap then. Talk about those two games, the Luton and the Swansea draw. Before we do that, a quick thank you, as always, to our sponsors, ZCZ Film, and our Patreon subscribers, helping us along in these dark and desperate seventh place moments. So let's talk about it then in the recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
The Luton game then, Ben, I must say that emotionally, this was the final game for me for this season. Emotionally, I sat down, paid my tenner for the iFollow, and just said, this is my last hurrah. This is the last chance to have the anxiety, the nervousness, and potentially the excitement. And, you know, if it all comes off good, then, you know, we keep on going. But if it doesn't work, then I did feel like I was checking out of the season if we didn't beat Luton, and obviously with Barnsley winning as well on the same day. And what we got was a one shot on target, frustrating performance. And it really... tempted not to say that summed our season up, but it certainly felt as if, you know, it was the theme that we felt for the last 11 or so weeks of this Reading side starting a bit poorly, having a good second half, but ultimately just no penetration and coming away with a result that just wasn't good enough for a playoff team.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that game was just a joke, really. I think I said in the column, the only positive thing about it was the trance tunes before kickoff, really. It was very poor all round. And I think to get to a point where you're waiting until, you know, injury time to get a shot on target in a game of that magnitude was ridiculous, really. And, you know, we've talked a lot over the last couple of weeks about the collective responsibility, and obviously Paulo's talked about that as well. But for me, as a fan in that moment, there was absolutely no one on that pitch that seemed even remotely aware that they needed to win the game. And that was the most frustrating thing about it. I think Luton, to their credit, were quite good. They looked quite bright going forward. But, you know, their season has long been over. And so they were just kind of playing out the game. And it felt at times like they were more interested than we were in getting 3 points. So I think I agree with you. I think at that point I was like, well, incredibly, we've still got an outside chance to get something into the playoffs heading into the Swansea game. But it was a very poor performance, really, and very disappointing. it was very difficult to watch at times and very lethargic. And it did really, as you said, sum up the last couple of weeks as kind of the club and as a fan going through those highs and lows. But I think certainly that game took the emotional toll on me, as I'm sure it did many others listening to this. So it was a difficult result to take, but it was what it was. And no amount of positivity from Panovic after the game could have convinced me otherwise. That was anything more than a shocking performance, really.
No, and this is the thing, is you mentioned Panovic. He will listen to him in a bit, and he did sound genuinely, not taken aback, but genuinely despondent after the Swansea game. And obviously, you know, if anyone has to believe, he is the one who has to believe, and that's fair enough. But him talking after the Cardiff and the Luton game did kind of give me a feeling of a man who was trying to convince himself as much as anyone else that this season was still alive. And that's the thing for the Luton game that I found perhaps most frustrating, is that the players who the onus was on to produce the winning goal were the ones who turned up the least of all. I felt like Lauren and Minamoto had a good game. And, you know, the defence did bits to stop Luton. Luton had a couple of chances they didn't take. Raphael made a bit of a flappy save that worked out. But it just felt to me like the players who were most able in that game were the defensive players, and that we go to the Swansea game. I think that the quite clearly the best player on the pitch actually for the Luton Reading game is John Swift when he came off the bench. And it was no surprise to see the Swansea game him start. Again, you just realise the fluidity of his play in midfield is so important. Why we can't quite get that out of Elise is probably an experience thing. Ajaria just, I don't know. Okay, let's just take a little brief pause here for Ajaria, Ben, because Aluko came on against Luton and he came on against Cardiff and he looked pretty decent, lively and all that sort of stuff. What would it have ever taken him for him to have started against Swansea? Because once again, we persisted with Ajaria on the left wing. And I can't understand what he has done to maintain his position in the team. While we've actually got someone who's coming off the bench week in, week out and doing more than he's done in the 80 minutes previously.
Yeah, I mean, going back even further with Aluko, I've always been, I suppose, in the minority, because I've always been quite a big fan of him. You know, the one thing that Aluko doesn't lack is effort. Now, I'm not saying that Ajaria, you know, doesn't put the effort in or doesn't put a shift in, because he does. But the problem with, you know, not just Ajaria, but for a lot of those players in that team, is that in recent weeks, there's been no end product. So in the same breath that we're talking about Ajaria and his end product, we could talk about Elise as well, who obviously was dropped yesterday, and rightly so. I kind of feel like really the playing Ajaria is more down to contract situation, because obviously we know that Aluko won't stay. So yeah. I suppose in Pavlovic's eyes, or, you know, in his mind, he's like, well, what's the point of playing him? And I feel like, you know, with Aluko being there, he's always given as much as he can give. He's never sulked. He's never thrown his toys out of pram. He's never gone on social media and complained. And he's been, you know, I don't like the phrase, but a model professional. Now, people listen to this might say, well, he's on, you know, 20 plus grand a week. It's not really the point, though. You know, we've seen in previous years when players haven't played that all hell was broken loose. And he has just got on with his job. And I feel very sorry for him, really, because he should have been given a chance with a lot of other managers. He should have maybe been more in the fold. I don't think shipping him off to China really helped anyone, because we were still paying his wages there. So, it that kind of situation really has summed up the season. And we've talked time and again about lack of quality and depth, really. And I think with Ajaria, he probably should have been taken out of the team, you know, 2-3 games ago, just to give him that breathing space. But with someone who's not going to be here next season, and there's no resale value, what's the point of playing him? And that's been a symptom, not just for this year, but for previous years as well. You know, you think back to the last game of last season, which was, what, late July, and how horrific that Swansea performance was. You know, there was players on that pitch that were never, ever going to stay at the club. So why should they bother, really? It summed up a very bizarre season. It summed up a very bizarre situation that Pavlovic has kind of found himself in recent weeks. And it summed up the fact that really, we have very little strength and depth to call on when players are struggling and need a break.
Yeah, which is best summed up, I think, by the stat that Reading have only used 25 players this season in the Championship, which is the lowest in the division. And it kind of made me think of, you know, that 11-12 season when Reading won the Championship. Perhaps you can obviously say, oh yeah, Jason Roberts came in and that was the big January signing, but we signed Hayden Mullins, who played 5 or 6 really important games. We signed Benikofobi on loan as well, who came on for, you know, he just ate up 20 minutes when players, if he wouldn't have come on, then players might have been too tired the next game, might have picked up an injury. These sort of things, you just need little bits here and there from your squad players. And you can say Pavlovic has got young players that he could have done that with. And I would certainly say that as a, you know, Aluko would have been a good option to do that sort of thing more with. But he doesn't feel like he can do that. And yeah, Ajaria is a good player. But I just think that, as you said with Elise, when they are doing the same thing week in, week out, and not producing that end product, then it just feels difficult to me to keep on with it. Funny enough, for the Swansea game, we looked pretty comfortable. Got into the lead, good goal from Yakimete. Joao and Rinomota kind of missed chances. What caused Reading's collapse then? Swansea getting two goals pretty quickly to turn it round, then hit the post as well, so should have basically won the game. But what was behind Reading's sort of slip from being in a good position?
Honestly, I think it's down to fatigue, Mark. I really do. That stat is incredible. 25 players used is, for a team that has basically been fighting at the top end of the championship all season, to use 25 players, the amount of energy that these players, spend in terms of chasing balls and tracking people and all the things that they do, I just can't believe that we've managed to get through, just using the minimum amount of players. It's incredible. And going back to Rudjara and Elise, there's probably some incredible stat that someone can throw out, but I would be really interested to know how many times they've been fouled this year and targeted by opposition players, because they are the ones that we'd look to get on the ball and kind of move it forward. But, they surely have taken more hits than they needed to from opposing players to just try and get the ball off them. But I think, the Swansea game, it really was down to fatigue, lack of concentration. I saw some bizarre things on Twitter about Raphael making a clanger. I mean, it was a good save initially to get down that low for who is, someone who's what, 6 foot something. And there was no one else around there. Now, had the players been on the ball a bit more, the defensive players, that would have been cleared and off we go. They weren't. And obviously Lowe pounced and does what he does best. I mean, he's a great player. It was highly likely that they were going to get some goals yesterday anyway. And then obviously with the final goal, I mean, he had more time than probably anyone has recently in any box. I mean, it was ridiculous. And that, again, is just down to lack of concentration, not tracking runners. So I really do feel like it's been down to fatigue. And this, we call it a collapse, but this kind of drop-off in performances has really been down to fatigue. I don't think Lucas Joao has played as many games ever in his career in a season. He looked absolutely exhausted. You could talk about Elise there. Lauren has obviously got away with very little criticism from Reading fans, but he's not been great the past few games either, because he's played pretty much every game this season. So there's a lot of tired legs in that team, and there is a lot of need to kind of regroup and see where we go next year. And that is why, me personally, I can't be overly critical on the club for what they've been able to achieve in a relatively short space of time this season.
Well, I was just, as you were talking, Andy, you don't ask and you don't get. I've got the stats for the most fouled players in the division. And Reading have 3 of the top 10 most fouled players this year in the Championship for total number of fouls. So Elise and Ajari have both been fouled 92 times. That's the 6th or joint 6th number of times being fouled. And Andy Rinomota, actually, 84 times being fouled as well, who's 10th in the league. So you're absolutely right. You've got players that have been kicked mercilessly for a lot of the year. And both of all of those players played over 3,000 minutes. Rinomota, 3,500 minutes, which is the third most out of those 10 players, just as a bit of a comparison. But I think, when you talk about criticalness of the team and everything, I'm just drawn to the realisation in my mind that if we'd have swapped this season round and we'd have started with this sort of dodgiest bout of form and ended on 7 wins out of 8, we'd have thought this is a brilliant team who's going to go on to great things next season. Now, obviously, momentum into next season doesn't exist as it would in that scenario in reality, but it does just show, doesn't it? It's how you finish, and it's the hope that kills you and all that sort of stuff. Comes around quite a lot. And there was one moment actually in the Swansea game when we were 1-0 up, and Sky Sports put their little as it stands table in the bottom corner, and suddenly we were only 5 points away from Swansea, and I was like, hang on a second, there's a chance that I didn't see us take. So those sort of things, I think those are the things that are the most galling, aren't they?
And at that point I just started googling Swansea's final fixtures. So hold on, could we catch them now? Obviously Barnsley are there, but I was like, well, if Swansea is the only one left, what can we do? And they did what they did last season and have managed to secure a playoff spot in Berkshire. So it is galling, and it has been, as I said, an up and down season, and it is, as we've always said with Reading, it is the hope that kills you. And I think based on their their performances in recent games. They've done well to keep it going up until the last two games, really. I think there's been some huge success stories, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute. But, you know, I'm not too despondent at this stage about how our season's gone. And I can understand people saying, oh, you know, we've bottled it and it's been a collapse and things like that. But, you know, without sounding boring, you've got to look at the bigger picture. And there is literally no Reading fan in the country or anywhere else that would have said that we would have been competing at the top part of this division this season. Absolutely no one. And if you were one of those people that thought, yeah, we'd do all right and we would be competing, you know, then you're going to be disappointed because you feel like you should have got there. But I just can't see how anyone can label this season as a disappointment and as a failure, because, you know, we were never, ever going to sustain that form, because we're not good enough. We haven't got the players to back that up. Like you said, we haven't got players that can come on and do 15, 20 minutes of high quality work towards the end of the game. We just don't have it. It's a difficult time for Reading fans, and there's a lot of split opinion in the fan base. But I think when people sort of go away and have a summer, they'll realise that actually this was a good season and we've performed well, really.
Well, let's end the recap then. There's one last point I want to make, but a couple stats to throw at you. Ironically, we're actually on the best home unbeaten run since August 2017, which was the period in which we made the playoffs. Six games we're unbeaten at home now, so that's the best run of the season. I think there's four draws in that, though. We are actually winless in 15 games versus Swansea, so maybe we shouldn't have expected anything, because, again, that's probably going to include a playoff defeat in there as well. The last point I'm going to make about this game then, contrast this game with the Bournemouth home game. And the reason that you can do that is because both Swansea and Bournemouth, when they came to us, were top sides, or our top sides. Both were actually on really bad form when they came to us and were there for the taking. And it shows how much we've slipped, as we've talked about, that the Bournemouth game, we blew out the blocks, took our chances, three great goals, game is done at half-time. Swansea game, we get a goal, can't build on it, didn't play badly at all, but just couldn't get it over and couldn't take that chance and couldn't get it over the line. And I suppose those two performances, if you want to compare and contrast how Reading have slipped from the middle of the season to the end of the season, I think that's a pretty good comparison for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd go back even further. I mean, there's four games that stand out for me this season. First one is obviously Blackburn away, early part of the season when Blackburn were a really good run and, you know, they were top scorers at that point and Armstrong was doing really well and we just absolutely savaged them. You know, there was literally no club that could have lived with us in that game. We were just superb from start to finish, really. Bristol City at home, where Bristol were on a good run of form as well. And again, had a fantastic result against them. Cardiff away, where, you know, suppose at that point they were a good side and we just made them look ridiculous. And obviously, you know, the Bournemouth at home game, which is probably my favourite of all because of the quality and you know, I generally can't remember a game where we were 3-0 up, you know, in a game of that magnitude. So, you know, we've had some great results this season, some great performances. The problem is that, you know, probably from Bournemouth at home, it kind of all deteriorated from there, really. I know that Don Goodman, the Sky Sports guy, said that it was Preston, and he's got a point. You know, there was an element of that missed penalty, maybe, that probably put the kind of the demons into our heads a little bit. But for me, I think it's probably the Bournemouth game was the height of what we reached this season. There are lots of good memories, but, you know, you think about Wickham away and you think about Birmingham away and that's 6 points and that would have got us in the playoffs. Yeah, we can look at missed chances, but we also need to kind of really celebrate how well this team has done with those games that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, we'll obviously be doing a season review at the end of the year where we'll have a bit more of an in-depth look back over the season. But just one game for me that I think in terms of turnaround and what went from good to bad, I think that Wickham game did a lasting psychological effect on the team, and certainly Lucas Shaw, if we win that game, it's very different. You mentioned Birmingham, a game where we went just as they got a new manager. So if they'd have sacked Aitor Goenka a week later, we might have been in the playoffs right now. But that is football. They play the cards you dealt. So let's hear from Roger Paunovic now, as I said, a bit despondent as he spoke to the club after the game. And after that, we'll be going into the mailbag.
We have to look at the things that we have to improve and implement in the future as one of our another element of our identity. But again, very proud. I didn't know actually what to say to the players because, again, I didn't prepare for this. But very proud of their effort and very thankful also for everything we've been through, all the setbacks, all the injuries, and being capable of recovering several times some of the players, not only recovering their health and well-being, but also their form and their performance. It's been great. It's been great to see the guys coming back and playing as a team, and you know, looking for each other. It's a great. Again, more positives you add to this, you feel more disappointed because today, I think we had a good game, but we didn't. I just, you know, feel it's a difficult moment.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
So, Alan Scott getting us underway then, emailing in thetilehurstend@gmail.com, the best place to send in your mailbag questions. He says, strip back the potential positive consequences of the new manager effect from this season, and what are we left with when you examine the last two thirds of this season in respect to Paolo's performance? It feels he's made little progress with such an expensive and talented squad at his disposal. Critically, when the pressure has came, we have flopped. Did this expose Paolo's shortcomings as a manager? Now, I suppose there's two answers to this question, and it's probably, you know, a really boring way of saying it's somewhere in between, but we have seen, as I talked about with Aluko and the substitutes we've spoken about in the last few weeks, and doing the same thing over and over again and in the last few weeks and expecting it to produce better results than it has done. That is a flaw on Paunovic's system, I think. We've attacked a lot of games and come away with some poor results, and the manager bears the brunt of that, I think. But I think it's a pretty heavy but, as we've spoken about earlier on the podcast, we don't have a big squad. The young players, you would have to assume that if he thought they were going to be properly championship ready, he would have played them more often. And really, I think, as Alan says, you know, the new manager effect of him coming in, I feel like there was a lot of performances in the last two thirds of the season where he has done particularly well, where he has produced some pretty good tactical setups that have got some good points. And ultimately, while he's not devoid of criticism for the post-mortem, as it were, he's probably not going to take the biggest slice of blame for me in terms of, you know, why we didn't make the playoffs.
No, I mean, Alan's raised some really good points, and this is a view that is widely held. I think at the moment you're either in the give him some time, give him a summer and see what he can do, or get rid of him now camp. I don't think there's any middle ground really. What Alan's saying there is true. We've dropped off and the confidence has dropped and the tactical decisions haven't been great. From my point of view, I just feel like it's not his team. So Paunovic, not Alan's, by the way. But, you know, from my point of view, he's come in 2 weeks before the start of the season. He's probably had maybe a week because of the COVID restrictions to actually work with the team. He had a weak squad to start with, a small squad, probably one of the smallest in the division. He was able to bring in three loanees who, to be honest, you know, when we do the kind of the season review, they're pretty average. They don't get near the first 11 in terms of starting at the moment, unless there's injuries. I know Estevez came on and scored a great goal yesterday, but he won't stay beyond this season. You know, Gibson has not been great, really, to be honest. You know, defensively quite flawed in a lot of respects. So, you know, there's a lot of players there that really you'd think, well, okay, Semedo, if we were going up, you'd probably keep him. Otherwise, not a lot of point. We've had major injuries, so that's not necessarily his fault or his kind of staff's fault. That's a historical conditioning issue that has been rife in the club for you know, 2-3 seasons. You know, and the facts are really that as it stands with two games left, we've won 19 games, which is the second highest since the 13-14 season. We've lost 13 games, which is the lowest, along with 16-17 and 13-14 seasons. The highest league position will be wherever we finish since 16-17. And we've conceded the least amount of goals since 11-12. So when you look at those statistics and you think, well, okay, the football at times has not been good the last couple of weeks, but actually when you strip it back to bare stats, he's done all right with a team that he didn't assemble, with a squad that he didn't pick, with players that are incredibly young and, you know, dare I say it, quite naive in these situations, with very little experience and leadership in the team, and he still managed to carve out probably a seventh place finish. Now, on paper, I think that's pretty successful. As you said before, if we flipped the season around, yeah, of course, but he wouldn't still be the manager. If we'd started the season that we'd had over the last 8-9 games, you can guarantee Paunovic wouldn't be here. So it's very, very difficult, and it's a very difficult season to review for those reasons, because it has been such a tremendously, you know, exciting, brilliant start. Kind of middle bit was a bit sticky and obviously completely tailed off recently. So it's very, very difficult to analyse it from a collective point of view. But actually, when you strip it back to those bare statistics and those individual games, I really do feel that we've done okay. And I think for that reason alone, he deserves another shot to be able to go, right, this is my summer, this is my pre-season, this is what I want to try and do. Try is the key word, because we all know the financial pressures that we're under. So I think we need to give him a little bit of a break and go, okay, well, look, let's just see what happens now. You know, I don't think we'll be battling relegation next year. I think there are going to be worse teams in the league than us. I think we will probably be sort of mid-table. I don't think we'll be pushing it as high as we have done, unless there's some major improvement in the strength and depth, which at the moment, no Reading fan sees because of the financial implications at the club. So that's my kind of long answer to that, Alan, if that's all right. Hopefully that makes sense to you.
No, I know what you mean. It's a very good way of putting it, is that if, you know, we have all of these things in comparison to last season. I think the problem is for myself and a lot of other Reading fans, of perhaps of my age and older, is that we see Reading as the team that won the championship in 06, stayed up, the team that won the championship in 12, that got to the playoff final in 17. You know, these are, over a pretty short space of time, have had some really amazing achievements. But if you narrow it down to the last 3 or 4 years, there haven't been any achievements. So it's very difficult. It depends where you're coming from as to how big Reading really are, perhaps. But, you know, one way you're saying about Paunovic coming in very late, he's finished higher than Middlesbrough, who have had probably about the same sort of level squad that we have, maybe a bit more or in terms of talent, and a manager who's been there for longer. QPR have had their manager a bit longer, more settled squad, finished above them. We're going to finish above Millwall, same again. Stoke, Preston, Blackburn, much more stability in all these teams, much more, and certainly, you know, not too far behind us in terms of quality, if behind us at all, and we have finished above them. So that's the championship, and I think if you take that as a big positive compared to where we have been previously, then that's, you know, that's cause to see it as a good season. The other part of the Paunovic question, Sean Rich 96 tweeted us as well, saying, if Dye decides that the only way around FFP is to go balls out on investment, that's his quote, by the way, promotion or bust, just kind of Wolves, Villa have done that before, has Paunovic deserved that chance to do that, or do we seek a more credible appointment? And this is the other part of the Paunovic win or out debate. It's not quite really there as a debate yet, but the question I would always say to anyone who kind of doubts having Paunovic in charge is, who do you get instead? We've done it time and time again, where you kind of sack a manager, then kind of look around and think, oh, well, you know, what is there? Nottingham Forest have got Chris Hughton in. I know he's a favourite of people saying, oh yeah, he's a good manager who can get teams up, but they're finished 17th. So that's not a good argument anymore. I just feel that the fundamental fact is, if you sack Paunovic, you have to find someone else, and there just isn't anyone else.
Well, I think it's, again, that's a really interesting question, because we said this time last year, in terms of, not, I keep saying that, obviously we were still playing, but you know what I mean, at the end of last season, where it's like, it's got to be promotional bust and let's throw money in it. There was no money that came in. So, as I said, three loanees, and that was pretty much it. You know, I think the way Panovic has played those players has made them more valuable. So there's more resale value in the players than there was this time at the end of last season. It depends if you want to sell your soul, really, and you go for someone like Nigel Pearson, where you go, right, just get us, you know, automatic promotion. Here's all the money you want, crack on with it. I don't feel like I know enough about Dai Young to really kind of answer that, really. And I don't mean that from a kind of a flippant point of view, but as fans, we know very little about him as an owner. He doesn't talk to us. He doesn't really communicate with us. From what we understand, he's very rarely in the country. And this is not me criticising him. This is just kind of the basics. You know, with John Medeski, he knew very clearly the kind of manager and the kind of people that he wanted in and around the club. That was then obviously slightly distorted by Zingerovic. And then obviously we had Clement and Gourlay and all those other chaps in. So it's become a bit blurred over the course of the last sort of 5-6 seasons as to what direction the club wants to go in. Again, I don't want to come across like I'm pro Pauno because I support the club, but I feel like he, based on those stats that I kind of rolled off, I feel like he deserves the opportunity to be given a bit of money and go, okay, what are you going to do with it? You know, I said when Bowen was sacked that we should have kept him. My view hasn't changed. I feel like Bowen probably would have done a similar thing to what Paunovic has done. So I'm not viewing him as kind of the golden goose and he's the be all and end all. But I just feel that if people have done a good job, they deserve a crack at trying to move it forward. And I think the least the owners could do is give him some time to create what he wants to do with that team, whatever that looks like, and just go from there. Now, whether or not they say it's just loans and that's it, let him go and pick the loans that he wants. If he wants to go and spend money or he's able to spend money, let him go and spend the money. You know, I would imagine we'll recoup some money a little bit this summer from the players that are gone. But, you know, we don't know, you know, we can be given figures, but we don't really know what that means for the owners and what they're prepared to stamp up and how much they're prepared to gamble, really. And, of course, as we know in this division, it is a massive gamble.
Well, that's a good chance to be in Sean Birch's question, who says it's probably quite likely that Elise will be sold. And whilst we should all want him to stay, it's understandable from a business point of view. What's the minimum amount you'd be happy with us selling him for? For me, anything less than £20 million is a disgrace. And this, there's two parts to this question for me. Is firstly, how good do you think Michael Elise is actually going to be? I think we can all agree that his potential is very high, but if you were to pick a player in the Premier League right now that you can see his career mimicking, who would that be? And for me, that links into how much you're going to get it for him. So I think that if someone offered £10 million for him and Reading accepted that, I wouldn't be angry about that. But forget the release clause reports, because we don't know if that's drawn up. But in a straight-up negotiation with 1 year left on his contract, the amount that he's produced this season and the years before, I think £10 million could get you, you know, £7 million for the bank to make sure that we don't go bust or FFP or whatever. And then hopefully, you know, £3 million be that in a loan, a good loan signing, maybe a sort of League One attacking midfielder who can come up and we can raise the game of and that sort of stuff. I think that's a reasonable enough scenario, given all that we know and how the world is and everything like that. I think expecting £20 million is a little bit of it. It would be more money than QPR got for Eberechi Eze, who is a better player. So I don't think we'll get 20. And Ben, I don't know who you would say for this, but if I was to say the sort of player that I think Elise would ultimately become in the years ahead, I would say Nathan Redmond, someone who's going to get between like 6 to 8 goals in the Premier League, 6 to 8 assists, you know, have a good season, may get 10 or 12. But he's not going to be a Jack Grealish. He's not going to be a Phil Foden. And therefore, that has to calculate into what you think you're going to get for him.
Well, I think in terms of comparison to players, I mean, I think, yeah, Redmond's probably not a bad shout. It depends. I know it's an obvious statement. I think it depends where he ends up. I get what Sean's saying about getting 20 million for him. And I think had he probably had a better run up to Christmas, we probably could have cashed in on him in January if people were going to stump up the cash, really. I think he's gone anyway. He's not staying. He's not going to sign a new contract with us, which is probably what the club will try and do. So I would imagine that they will probably start looking for suitors for him. Now, one or two things will happen. Someone will either come in and go 15 million done and that's it, or, you know, because it's a buyer's market, there will be clubs like Wolves, probably Crystal Palace because they love a bargain, maybe Southampton. They'll lowball and they'll probably start at something like, you know, 8 or 9 and then work it up, and there'll be a bit of a bidding war between sort of 3 or 4 clubs, and then it's down to who pays the most. I think whatever happens is gone regardless. I think really the board have got to get as much money as they possibly can for him, knowing that it's going to be a good 5-6 years before they're in a position where they've got anywhere near as someone as valuable as Elise to sell. Controversial opinion, I don't think Elise is as good as everyone makes out. I think he's really struggled these last few games. I think he's a great player. He's clearly very popular in the dressing room, but I don't think he's going to be hugely missed. Now, he's not going to be hugely missed if we manage to keep Swift. If we don't keep Swift and we don't keep Elise, which we won't, we're in trouble because there's no one else to play that position. So we're going to have to buy. And the problem is with us is that because our financial situation is so public, clubs are basically just going to take the mick with what they're trying to buy.
Yeah.
On top of that, once we get a fee in for those players, the clubs are then going to go, right, we're going to add an extra 1 or 2 million to the players you're after as a club because we know you've got the money. So either way, it's going to be a very difficult summer, and it's going to require someone very, very astute in the football business world to be able to guide us through it. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be difficult. And I think 10 million would be great for us. Anything more than that is a real bonus.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. We need someone who is going to be Nicky Hammond-esque, in someone who can get £5 million for Matt Mills in 2011 is the sort of nous that we're going to need. And that is difficult. Kev O'Brien saying, if you had to sell one, who would it be out of Swift, Zhao and Elise? And I suppose we probably have just kind of leaned towards Elise there purely because of the capital that you can get for him. Obviously, if it's 30 million for Swift or 10 million for Elise, it's a no-brainer. But the one who's going to generate the most cash out of that is Elise. The one who actually, out of those three players, who you'd say, here's a game, who would you most rely on over the course of the last season? Elise is probably the last player you'd rely on. I know what you mean when you're saying Elise is not as good as everyone makes out. I think it's potential. It's obviously homegrown and everything like that, and he is a very good player. But a lot of what people are hanging their hopes on for Elise is potential. Now, if we, whatever reason, keep Elise next season, he would have to score 15 goals and make as many assists, because that's the trajectory that he has to follow for him to be worth keeping hold of if we weren't going to sell him for £10 million. Now, do we think that's going to happen? I don't know. I mean, out of those three players, would you say that there is anyone that you would most be comfortable leaving?
Well, I mean, that's a really specific set that he's gone for in terms of moving on. I think Elise's gone regardless. I think anything over 7 or 8 million he's gone. With Zhao, I mean, that's going to be an interesting one. If a club comes up and says, right, here's 4 million, 5 million, I think the club would probably take that. I think Paunovic knows that out of those three, Swift is by far the most important player out of all of them. Because of what he can bring and his kind of, his control on the ball and the way that he can dictate games. Now, obviously, we've not had a full season out of Swift, so I think that might just get him through the summer with us. I think clubs might be a little bit more dubious of spending money on him, I hope. With Zhao, I would like him to stay. Of course I would, because we need goal scorers in the team. That said, I think if there's a good enough offer that the board can accept, I think he'll go too. And that then leads on to a whole host of potential situations where there could be any player up for grabs at that point. So I think it's really important that the club identify who they desperately, you know, want to make money out of, and then who they kind of think, well, if we get a good offer, they can go. And then players that they absolutely categorically need to stay. In that bracket, I'd put Winamota, I'd put Loren, you know, I'd put a Yeard on at the moment because we haven't got anyone else to go. Obviously, Morrison and McIntyre are kind of, in theory, up for grabs. But again, you know, I don't see any clubs steaming in and going, here's loads of money for them in terms of wages. So I think it's going to be a really interesting summer. And we've said for the last two, three seasons, our summer is really important, but this really is a big one because we desperately need some money through the door to avoid any sort of points deduction.
Yeah, well, Andy Taylor says how much of this squad will still be here come the first game in August. I think that's that could take us a long time to go through that. So I think I'm just going to leave that one for now and say, I mean, he says that Richard DeLuca and Baldock are going. I think it's so difficult to predict how many others are going, and what ties that into is Philip Norris saying, do you think we'll get a points deduction this summer? Ben Stevenson saying, with FFP and the points deduction in place, I mean, I'm not sure there is a points deduction in place as well, but would you be happy to sell the likes of Rafael, Joao, Puskas, the main boys on a high wage, and play the likes of Southwood, sign a League One striker for next season instead? Now, points deduction-wise, I think there's going to be a lot of politics going to be at play here, because FFP, or profit and sustainability as it's known in the Championship, is not just going to be near Reading. It's going to be a lot of clubs that, because of the pandemic, fundamentally, are going to be wavering around those lines. And therefore, if it comes to be that there's seven or eight clubs that are going to be hit with points deductions, I don't think that it's politically viable to do that in the midst of a pandemic of all that we know. And just FYI, the accounts that we've just had for the season, I think it's 1920, the accounts for this season for everyone are going to be absolutely terrible because there was no fans at any point, really. So I don't think that the points deduction is particularly viable. If it happens, you know, I'll accept I'm wrong and that maybe they are going to just points deduct half the league and that's what they want to do. But I think what's much more likely, Ben, is that we'll be under some sort of transfer embargo, like we've been under before. That was the kind of soft embargo where the Football League had to green light our signings. If that is the case, Reading are probably going to end up selling early. Elise, I mean, Ben there, he says, you're going to be happy to sell Puskas. Yes, I'll put him in a wheelbarrow and walk him there myself. It's honestly...
Oh, that's harsh on George. I love George. I think he's great.
He is someone. If someone offered £3 million for him, I would absolutely wave goodbye, because
I think he's up for grabs. I think that, you know, honestly, Mark, I think this season, or this pre-season, I think they're all up for grabs. I think that whoever, I can't really say it, you just mentioned it, but Rafael for Southwood, yeah, Southwood's out of contract. For God's sake, give him another contract, you know, even if you give him 1 year, because if someone comes in £2 million for Rafael, yeah. I'm not against Rafael, but it's money through the door, and we can replace these players with players that we know have got a bit of hunger, a bit of heart. Southwood is so highly rated by so many in the game. You know, when he had the loan spell up in Scotland, they absolutely loved him. So,
well, and also we've got Southwood, and then we've got Conyer Boyce-Clark as well, who's probably a bit green to be having in the Championship squad at the moment. But if that's the scenario we have to have, then, you know, I think so be it in a way. But what I mean about Puskas and those sort of players is that they are absolutely not worth, you know, you don't want to sell them for nothing. But I just feel like him in particular is the sort of player who's going to have resale value, particularly to foreign clubs, you know, as the first choice Romanian striker and that sort of stuff. He's the sort of one that I think the club are going to have to say, if we do encounter, you know, a transfer embargo or something like that, he is the sort of player that I think the club are just going to have to say, this is the, you know, these are the guys that we're going to sell. You said earlier about the club need to know who is potential, obviously, you know, high marker for players they don't want to sell, but who is up for grabs. I really do think that he should be one of them, because fundamentally he's not done enough for me. And
the other one we haven't mentioned is Liam Moore. You know, if an offer of 2-3 million comes in, I think he's gone as well, because you know, he's not been great the last couple of games. I don't know if it's because of the, you know, the kind of the fatigue element, or maybe the social media, you know, that kind of, you know, appalling incident is playing on his mind. But he's been touted for a long time to be leaving, and it's never come to pass. So I honestly think with him, you know, if we can keep McIntyre, Morrison, and obviously we've got Holmes as well, and then bring someone else in potential loan, that's four centre backs that we've got there, and we've survived with less than that. So I really feel like if a bid comes in for more, I think he's gone as well.
Yeah, points deduction then, that was the point, kind of the crux of the question. Are you know, out of 10, how much are you fearing a points deduction this summer?
I think you're right. I think you're spot on about all the other clubs. They're gonna massively set a precedent if they go to us, right, that's 12 points deduction or 10 points or whatever they want to give us. Although they're normally multiples of three, aren't they? So I think I just don't see it. I just think they're going to give us grace. And I think, you know, the main thing to Reading fans is if you can afford it and you can get to the stadium, just go out and buy the brand new shirt and that'll sort us out, because, you know, all the money through the door at the moment is going to be really important for the merchandising and everything. So I don't see us getting a points deduction. I think maybe an embargo, but we can still do something with loan players there. But I honestly feel like they're gonna have go through a process of a couple of weeks where they just get rid of players and then start again and go, well, how much money have we got to give over to the accounts and into the bank? How much can we reinvest in the squad? And I think that's going to be key first. What I don't want to see us doing is kind of stockpiling players and bringing players in and then trying to shift players after that. I'd rather see players go and then go, right, well, what have we actually got to do now? What do we need? What's the priority? And then just go from there.
Yeah, it could be a very long, a very quiet and then a very long transfer market in terms of incomings, which probably is right. Actually, one of the things, very minor points to just tag on to this, I think the Kasumo sponsorship is up this summer, and then it's actually 150th anniversary season next season. So don't be surprised if the club don't have a sponsor on their shirt next season, is all I'm saying about that, because it might well tie, as you say, buying a new shirt might just make it a bit more appealing to fans if they do an old school no sponsor and try and make the money back in terms of fans buying the shirts. Maybe that is where we'll end up. Final question then, of the mailbag, Paul Hawkins saying, why are Reading so poor at recruitment? Let's compare Brentford signing of assets and selling them on, paying less wages, bills, / agent fees and having more success. Do we need a director of football the club needs to survive also by selling players on for huge profit? We seem incapable. Well, I would agree with all of that as a quick answer. The Brentford model, I think it's easy in football to look at clubs doing it well and say, why aren't we doing it well? Obviously, there's, you know, you can only so many clubs can do it in the same way. And Brentford have a bit of a niche. They kind of go to the Scandinavian region, pick up players there. They have a B team. They don't have an academy at all. So, you know, it works for them and that's their thing. It's obviously, you know, it's not viable for Reading to completely copy that. But it is possible to have a good recruitment set up in the Championship. Reading just, for whatever reason, I think partly is the sheer refusal to sell any player, / the Ron Gourlay massive contracts, / the general poor performance of the team. It just all mounts together, doesn't it? It just all combines to create the situation.
Yeah, I think he's spot on. I think historically, and when we say historically, you know, going back sort of 8-9 years, that's been the case. There's been no real direction. There's been no real model for the players that we want to bring in and to grow. I think, you know, the Brentford one is a good one to look at. But for every Brentford, there's a Nottingham Forest who have got about 85 players on their books. So, you know, we're not as bad off as other clubs, but then there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And I think we just need now clear direction. I think these players that have kind of been on the bench all season from the academy and from the under-23s, I think they need to really be given, you know, given the confidence to kick on and improve and be part of the team. We know it can happen. The club is very proud of their academy graduates, but we just need that clear direction and say this is the model that we're going for. And, you know, Reading fans will get behind it because that's what they do. They want to see fight. They want to see passion. They want to see players giving it their absolute all, and part of the reason that, you know, the relationship is soured between the fans and the club is because of the poor recruitment. Not only that, but the ridiculous contracts that were handed out. That's not the player's fault. You know, if someone's offering to pay you 20 grand a week to be a utility player, you're going to take it. So, you know, I those days are gone now, really, with Bulldog and Aluki moving on and other players as well. So yeah, I think he's absolutely spot on with what he said there. But I really do feel like there is a change coming, and with a director of football comment, I don't think it's necessary. I don't think directors of football really are kind of a vital anymore. I know we've got like a footballing board that includes Michael Gilkes, which is probably not a bad thing, but someone really needs to be taking charge of these decisions and saying what do we want as the model for this club? Forget this season, forget next season. What are we going to look like in, you know, 3, 4, 5 years' time?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's move on into news bites then and discuss what's been going on around the club in the past few days.
Send in your views to thetarnhurstend@gmail.com and have your say in the mailbag.
I suppose this links in with the mailbag, because anyone who wants to send us a question or a thought for next week's show, please do that via the email, thetylersend@gmail.com. Alternatively, you can send us direct messages on Facebook and on Twitter, or just, you know, tweet us generally. There won't be I'm pretty certain that we're going ahead now as joining in what is turned into a huge social media boycott across English football, from the Premier League down to the Women's Super League and the Football League, as well as the FSA, the Fans Federation, the LMA, loads of organisations like that, loads of supporters groups getting involved. A huge 3-day from 3 p.m. on Friday up until the end of Bank Holiday Monday, a social media boycott of all platforms as a show of solidarity against the platforms that we consider to not be doing enough to end online hate and online abuse, particularly racist abuse, which continues to be all too prevalent in football and in society. So we are looking like we'll be joining that. We're just, you know, it's certainly as a what we consider ourselves to be a pokey Reading podcast, it feels perhaps a little bit big for our boots to be kind of making these gestures. But I think ultimately the solidarity of it is kind of persuading us to join in. And that means, obviously, you know, just for the side point of the mailbag, do send it in directly to us. But Reading are going to be joining it. I think certainly a lot of Reading pages and everything will be joining it as well. And Ben, this is it's good to see the club being part of these things at the forefront. And obviously what we saw with the awful incident with Liam more recently, it certainly couldn't come. It's certainly not too soon.
Yeah, I mean, you can't criticise anything or fault anything that is actively trying to tackle racism. I there's no other option at the moment. sounds very old school, but if people can't behave, you take it away from them. And that's exactly it, really. It's just beyond disappointing now. It's just disgusting that this keeps happening. So, yeah, top marks to everyone involved. And you hope that it will have, you know, a positive impact and people will really start to think about their actions and the way that they post things on social media.
No, 100%. So, yeah, as the club and a lot of other club people being involved in that. Let's talk about what's gone on around the club as well this week. Not pretty disappointing last few weeks for the women's team. No wins in 7 now. Lost 3-2 to Spurs in the FA Cup. Then a 1-1 draw with Birmingham in the Super League. So they're 7th in the league, winning four games out of 20 this year. It's a weird league, the Super League. Certainly a bit of a two-tier league with inside it. And Reading sadly slipping into the lower tier of that. Also bidding farewell to Farr Williams, who is retiring from football as well. Been a real stalwart for England over the years and seeing out the last few years of her career with Reading. We've been very happy to sponsor her this year as well. And also we had him on the show a few years ago. So really top player, top person, and congratulations on a great career, Farr. If you're listening, and any Reading fans, obviously do send on your congratulations to her for a very good career in the game. She's put that up on Twitter. Under-23s, they lost 2-1 to Sunderland today. The under-18s had a 5-2 defeat to Brighton and a 5-1 defeat to Fulham. So not really a great picture around the club at the moment. They're 11th in the Premier League at the moment. The under-18s, they got Southampton, who were bottom on Tuesday. Reading play on Saturday, 3 p.m, May the 1st. Let's talk about that now in Big Match Preview.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Keep an eye out for Norwich away. As I say, 3 p.m. it is on Saturday. We were talking about this before. I follow, I'm pretty sure, is an option, but I think Sky Sports at this moment in time haven't announced what game they're going to do on Saturday. So that maybe by the time you're listening to this, they will have it. Might be on TV because if Norwich winning the championship, they need a win to guarantee it or to better Watford's result. If Watford don't win, then that pretty much guarantees it as well. So yeah, pretty big game for Norwich. Sadly, not a big one for Reading. And I suppose the question is, Ben, do we do anything different? Do we shunt the loanees out of the squad or shunt the players out of the squad who are out of contract at the end of the season, throw more kids in? Do we at least take this game a bit more seriously before doing that against Huddersfield? I would not like to see us go and get a whopped 7-0 by playing loads of kids against the best team in the league.
No, I don't think you'll do that. I was really encouraged actually by, I know he was very despondent and you know, disappointed with the, with the Swansea result and, you know, the fizzle out of the season, really. But, you know, one of the things that stuck out or sticks out for me is the fact they said we still got responsibility to the fans and to the club. And I think it's very easy to say that, but I really hope he sticks by that because, you know, we've still got to play a game of football. Norwich will probably win. Anytime a team needs anything, they play us and they get it. So, you know, they'll get the win and they'll be champions, and congratulations to Norwich because you've had a great season. But what I would say is that there is literally no point in putting Baldock and Aluku in the squad because they're gone. As much as I like those players for their work ethic and their professionalism, as I said earlier, there's no point having them there. You know, let's just see what else other players can do if they come on off the bench and go from there, really. In terms of team selection, I think you'll probably want to play some of those players that have been injured. So, you know, if Swift is fit enough, which he should be to start the game, then see if we can increase his minutes heading into pre-season. Same with Jao. I'd probably stick Elise back in just to mix it up again. But yeah, I mean, you'd like to see a few more younger players come in, maybe stick Tetek in for Reno or Loren to give them a bit of a break. But, you know, other than that, there's very little option that he's got, really. You could argue that he could play someone like Neves coming through, but would he want to chuck, you know, a young striker into the mix against the best team in the division? Probably not. It's probably not a good game to ground him in. You know, maybe Huddersfield, the last game of the season, might be a better game for that. So I think the team selection will be intriguing in terms of who he values there and who he wants to push through. But I don't see anything hugely different in what's going to happen in that game, really.
No, it's actually some stats to throw at you for this one. The last time a clean sheet was kept in this game was 2012 when we were in the Premier League. So it's the last, you know, 8 or 9 meetings have been festooned with goals. There's always been there's a hell of a lot of 2-1s in there, as it was earlier in the season. Reading haven't beaten Norwich since 2016. That is 6 games without a win against them. It is just one of those games that Reading are going to have to... It would be quite ironic, I suppose. That is one aspect of it, if Reading do go and produce an amazing performance. I suppose we can't rule out the idea that the pressure has been getting on this squad and that now that is unleashed, they can go and play a great game of football. I suppose that is one element to it that perhaps would be a bit of a sod's law factor for Reading. But yeah, we've given Norwich some good games over the last few years. As I say, the 2-1 defeat early season wasn't particularly bad. 2-2 we drew there in April 2019 with that Rinomota late goal. So certainly no reason for Reading fans to think we are going to go there and automatically get tonked 3-0. In terms of predictions, the league, to update you on that, as it gets very hot with the last couple games left, nobody picked a draw versus Luton. Handbags and Ollie picked a draw versus Swansea. I had a 1-2 Swansea win, so I was very close to reclaiming top spot with that one. But Westie is currently top with 27. Handbags 26, myself and Ollie 25, and Sim is on 20. Ben, well, prediction-wise, what are you going to say for Norwich?
I will predict that if Reading fans have got to pay for the game on iFollow, very few will. That would be my prediction. Score-wise, I mean, I'm just going to go 2-1 Norwich. I just think that they're going to want to win the title and they're going to want to do it quickly and they don't want to eke it out till the last last game of the season. So I think the emphasis more is going to be on them. I get what you're saying about the pressure being off Reading, but I don't think they've really played like a team under pressure. I think that's been the problem, I think, over the last couple of weeks. So I don't see any massive change in our performance or tempo. So, yeah, I'm just going to go 2-1 Norwich, I think.
Yeah, nervous energy has been in short supply. Nervous despondency has maybe been the thing that Reading have had a lot recently. I'm going to go 3-1 Norwich. I think ultimately this is a game where Reading... Yeah, there's goals in this fixture normally. Norwich aren't the world's best team defensively and Reading aren't the world's worst team offensively. So I think we'll score. But yeah, I think Norwich will have too much and there's quite a high chance of a late satisfying ceiling goal for them to guarantee the title. And they'll run off merrily into the night and Reading will be left to contemplate another year in the Championship, as I'm sure we've been doing for the last well, last couple of weeks in reality. So that draws an end to this episode of the Tilehurst End podcast. Ben, as ever, a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Mark. You take care and have a good week, everybody.
Absolutely. And we'll be back after that Norwich game then for the penultimate show of Reading season. It feels like it's been a bit of a roller coaster, but one of those roller coasters where you're all waiting for the big dip at the end and it just kind of glides effortlessly back into the tracks and you have to get off the roller coaster and ask, is that it? Well, sadly, playoff hopes have been dashed, but Norwich away, it's a chance to go and have the last laugh. Come on, you arse.